de-racializing economic inequality and disparity was the task ahead. So how do you do that? I mean, that's the question that's facing the ANC, their partners in the Communist Party, and the trade union movement. The trade union movement now, COSATU, being 1.8 million members strong, so four times as large as when it was founded, constituting about a quarter of the employed workforce. Now, again, that's a small number, because many, many millions and millions of people in South Africa are unemployed or underemployed, 35% unemployment, huge informal, so-called informal sector employment from people washing their cars in the street to hawkers and so forth. None of these people are covered by any basic labor laws or protections, and the agricultural sector is the same problem. So there are millions and millions of people who work very hard in South Africa, but who don't have the basic protections of the trade union movement, as long as they work in the informal sector, and the trade union movement is indeed concerned about those people. The trade union movement, quite strong still in the mining industry, metalworking, food and canning, textile, public sector unions, very, very, that's the biggest area of growth, I think. Of course, now the state is controlled by their comrades, not by, the biggest affirmative action program in the history of the world is the African nationalist, Afrikaner nationalist government under apartheid, which created this enormous, apartheid, another one of the aspects of evil genius in apartheid was it simultaneously suppressed black Africans and created this huge burgeoning, that is to administer apartheid, required these enormous bureaucratic structures in terms of in the Labor Department, in the so-called Department of Native Affairs, to administer apartheid required a lot of bureaucrats. All those bureaucrats were Afrikaners, right? And they got these incredible state sector jobs. Now that's beginning to fade away, and the public sector unions of African workers are growing in strength and significance. Now this means that for organized workers, the areas of government concern are things like trade policy. Textile workers are concerned with tariffs. Industrial policy. You know, what areas of the economy are going to be stimulated by government policy, and what areas are going to fall behind? Are we going to be export-oriented, or are we going to be oriented towards producing goods that South African consumers can and want to buy? And the other key issue for trade unions, organized workers, is privatization of state assets and municipal services. Now, it's on these issues, basic government policy over things like tariffs, industrial policy, and privatization, that a major rift is beginning to open between the African National Congress and the COSATU, right? Because there's some basic fundamental disagreements about the direction that the economy should go, and in particular about, let me put it another way, because I don't think there's a disagreement about that. Everyone agrees that the economy needs to grow, it needs to create jobs, it needs to create jobs where people will get skills and training to get into those jobs. It needs to modernize. All right? Everyone agrees on those things. There's a sharp disagreement between the trade union movement and ANC policymakers in the president's office about how to get there. All right? So that's what I'm going to spend the rest of my talk about. It's about the nature of that disagreement and what it means in terms of South African politics and really in terms of our own analysis of the place of workers in a global economy today. When the ANC came into power in 1994, policy intellectuals inside the labor movement, people who cut their teeth politically and intellectually, helping to build these trade unions in the 1980s and helping to administer them and helping to steer them in the right direction, helped draft the key government document that outlined what a post-apartheid government in South Africa would do in terms of creating a healthier economy and forging ahead in the direction of social equality. Political equality in 1994, every South African got to get in line and cast their vote. 66% of them voted for the ANC, not a big surprise. But of course, as we know, political equality and economic equality are vastly different questions. So in 1994, the ANC came into power with a basic platform, a roadmap for how to get to economic equality, or at least how to move in that direction. And that was called the RDP, the Reconstruction and Development Program. And this program, which is published and can buy it in any South African bookstore still, even though it's pretty much a dead letter in terms of policy, was drafted in large part by people coming out of the trade union movement. All right. What did the RDP say? I know if you go read it, it's an incredibly boring document. It's your basic dry policy document. But when you go through it, you can see what it means. The basic idea of RDP was growth based on meeting basic needs. growth based on infrastructural investment. You want to provide running water to the townships, you need people to build the pipes. Okay? Growth based on the redistribution of assets. You want to drive a consumer economy, you put money into more people's pockets instead of depending on a few rich people who are going to buy foreign imported cars or foreign imported stereos and the rest of it. All right? So growth based on infrastructural development, meeting basic needs, redistribution, boosting domestic spending. All right, there once was a name for this particular policy. I think it was called Keynesianism. All right, this is derived, basically, if you want to think about it in American terms, this was the South African New Deal. All right, I'd be curious to go back and talk to some of the people who helped draft RDP, and I'm curious if they had that in their mind. All right, but it's very easy to see that basically New Deal politics, as they emanated in the mid to late 1930s, which required both a strong trade union movement that would boost wages, lots of public spending on infrastructural development, and the idea that you put money in the hands of the person in the street to help generate consumer spending and lift the economy. That was the idea, that was the political program that was linked to basically a social democratic order. And in the eyes of Kosatu militants, this was the path actually to socialist transformation. Now, that may or may not have been true, but it's almost hard to remember this in South Africa today, that in the 1980s, as the liberation movement picked up steam, and as trade unionists had a major hand in shaping it, there was a very, very powerful sense that liberation would mean the destruction of South African capitalism, that liberation wouldn't just mean the ending of apartheid and the dismantling of racism, but it would also usher in some kind of socialist transformation. People were vague on what that would mean. Now, 1989 greatly changed the rules of the game in some bad ways and some good ways. But the collapse of the former Soviet bloc, the collapse of a socialist alternative, such as it was, meant on the one hand that bargaining was possible. That is, the Afrikaners, the nationalist government, one of the key trump cards that they consistently were able to play, not least with the West, with Reagan and Thatcher, was, well, yes, of course, we're all for black rights, but if we cave to the ANC, it's going to be a communist, it's going to be a Soviet South Africa, is that what you really want, sitting on top of major strategic minerals and resources? Right? Thatcher and Reagan in the West basically bought this argument for 25 years. Okay? Thatcher and Reagan being the worst example, but I mean, I think strategically, the United States, during the Cold War, was never comfortable with siding with the ANC and with the basic project of national liberation, because they, in their eyes, it meant a Soviet South Africa. Right? This is the same moment at which you have, basically, we're in a war in Angola. South African was the US proxy to fight against Cuban troops in Angola in the 1980s. That was going on. So the collapse of the Soviet alternative, the collapse of the socialist world, did a lot to push the Afrikaners to the bargaining table. But it also did a lot to sort of suck out some sort of utopian vision of socialist transformation that the ANC, some of the ANC, and then certainly the trade union movement carried with them. So RDP was kind of the best they could come up with, sort of a path to social democracy more than socialism, I think. Now, so that was in 1994. In the era of all these buzzwords, globalization is a word you hear all the time in South Africa, the Washington Consensus is another term that gets thrown around. TINA, there is no alternative. We hear a lot about the third way. Right, so we're living in an era in which that sort of path to socialist transformation, even for those people who lived the ideal for many years, is no longer, that route is blocked, and there is no alternative. You must play by the rules of the global capitalist game. And that those rules are set in such a way that the overall direction of an economy is not going to be steered from below by mass organization. The other thing about the Reconstruction and Development Program is it had a very democratic notion. That is, how a community would participate in the reconstruction and development of South Africa was not going to be determined out of the Ministry of Finance or even the Ministry of Labor, but by the people in a township, by the people in a factory. They would say, here are our needs, here's where we want to go, help us get there. You know, we want running water in this community. Here's how we want to do it, and help us, you know, we want to be facilitated. That was the model of RDP. That model has essentially been shoved aside by a model that's much more top-down, by a model that's much more in tune with the realities of globalization and the Washington Consensus, by a model that, for lack of a better term, is not Keynesian, but is Greenspanism, basically. And that is the major direction of the economy is going to be directed by tinkering at the top with things like financial markets, interest rates, and government budgets. And that is the main rudder by which you can steer the national political economy. That's what's going on in the United States, of course, successfully for the last 8 to 10 years, less successfully, I think, over the next 8 to 10, we'll see. And this is the model that increasingly, even, or especially, the African National Congress, and the South African Communist Party, for that matter, has begun to embrace under the rubric of GEAR. RDP was the great acronym of the liberation movement in 1994. It's now been replaced by GEAR. Anyone who's read anything about South Africa over the past 4 or 5 years is probably familiar with that acronym. Growth, employment, and redistribution. It seems to have some of the same ideas. However, in the view of many people in the trade union movement, many people on the left, and myself included, GEAR has meant growth, or at least it supposedly has meant growth. There's a debate about that. But it really has not meant employment, and it definitely has not meant redistribution. Or it subordinated those latter two goals, employment and redistribution, to the overall idea of growth. Growth, 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 generated by one thing and one thing only, direct foreign investment. Right? DFI is the great watchword of South Africa today. That's what's going to pull us out, is capital coming from abroad under terms dictated by the owners of that capital, not by South African reality, under terms dictated by the IMF and the World Bank. Now, what does this mean in practice? All right, first of all, GEAR, unlike RDP, was not generated from the grassroots or from the trade union movement, but as a policy emanated in particular from government ministries and the finance ministry, especially, in consultation with capitalists, with international bankers, with the IMF, and with the World Bank. So instead of going to the people and saying, what do you want, and we'll help you get there, they would go to the IMF and World Bank and say, here's what we want, how are you going to help us get there? So how do we do that? All right. Again, this is emanating from the African National Congress. That's the key thing I think that we have to understand here. This is emanating from the government. And, ironically, GEAR was promulgated without much consultation. All of a sudden, in June 1996, this new government economic policy, GEAR, was announced, and people in the trade union movement were like, whoa, where did that come from? No one ever consulted us, but this suddenly became government policy. Denounced vigorously by the Communist Party of South Africa. This is not the path to socialist transformation. This isn't the way to go. And yet, at the same time, who implements GEAR? Who are the key people? Alec Irwin, Minister of Trade and Finance, a communist. Jeff Radebe, Minister of Public Enterprises. He's the one who oversees the privatization of state assets and municipal services. He sits on the Central Committee of the South African Communist Party. Geraldine Fraser-Moleketa, I can't remember her portfolio, but she basically bargains with public sector unions over their wage packet. Wage restraint, all right? Also a communist, all right? So there's great irony here. What did GEAR propose? Direct foreign investment being the number one priority? That means reducing state expenditures. It's the key thing, all right? Low government budgets, fiscal discipline, restrictive monetary policy, very low inflation targets, embracing free trade. So one of the key problems for the textile workers is they're saying, well, look, the ANC under the GEAR policy is reducing tariff barriers in things like the textile industry more rapidly than they have to. There are certain tariff barriers that they must reduce at a certain pace under international trade agreements, under GATT, the General Agreement on Tariff and Trade, but they're like going one step further. All right. This is the complaint the trade unions have. So the embrace of free trade, low tariff barriers, and for the unions, wage restraint, and in particular, be more flexible. There are too many labor laws on the books. It's too hard to do business in South Africa. Workers have too many rights. This is the basic problem. This is what's holding up investment. This is what's hampering the economy. This is the line that the ANC is promulgating. Obviously, trade unions are not happy with this. And finally, I think that the other key issue and the other key place in which trade unions, COSATU, is butting heads with the ANC is over the issue of privatization. Privatization of the telephone company, the electric company, and especially municipal services in large urban areas like Johannesburg, where there are very powerful public sector unions under the South African Municipal Workers Union, SAMWU, and the Kosanti's position is halt privatization now. I mean, they just are against it. And the ANC is pursuing it as quickly as they can. What have been the results? All right, Kosanti's main argument against GEAR, other than the sort of philosophical, ideological arguments, we oppose privatization, we think workers don't have enough rights, we think there should be more state expenditure to drive the economy at the base in a Keynesian fashion rather than tighter budgets in order to attract direct foreign investment. But the strongest, and I think one can debate this, I'm being partisan here, but I'm willing to open up the idea that given global realities of economic development, perhaps there's a debate about this. But Kosanti's strongest argument is that GEAR has not worked. Right? GEAR has now been in place for 5 years. There have been 500,000 job losses. Crime and poverty are as widespread as ever in South Africa. The problems are still very grave. Local investment is low. There has not been a lot of direct foreign investment. Even while I was in South Africa, just during the 8 months I was there, the rand went from 6.25 rand to a dollar to almost 8 rand to the dollar. That's good for me. I was being paid in dollars, but it was very depressing to watch because it wasn't good for South Africa. So this sort of neoliberal, for lack of a better term, overall economic vision was essentially not doing much to move the country in the right direction. So what does Kosanti want or propose instead? Right? What do you know what you're against? You're against neoliberalism. What are you for? And these are the demands put forth in the general strike in May, and also put forth in the proposed or threatened general strike that's coming up in March. I just read this week, however, just 3 days ago, that they canceled, the trade union movement canceled this call general strike for March, and it's begun to sort of compromise with the government. It's unclear to me what that's going to mean. What does Kosanti want? Investment to create jobs. Laws that will force companies to negotiate retrenchments, firings, layoffs. Right? They want layoffs to be a negotiated part of labor agreements and contracts. They want protectionism. They want higher tariffs. They want an end to privatization of state assets and certainly an end to privatization of municipal services. They basically want a return to the economic vision that was outlined in 1994, the Reconstruction and Development Program. And I guess this no longer necessarily holds true this week because of this new negotiation, but in particular the trade union movement, I think they said something like, there will be blood on the floor, blood in the streets, if these proposed revisions to the Labor Relations Act, which are allegedly going to create a more flexible labor market, move forward. Those included things like now there's a law saying, you know, you don't have to be forced to work on Sunday, and if you do work on Sunday, you get paid double time. The government wants to change that so that you can work on Sunday. And other basic protections that were going to be eroded. Now, that's now been negotiated and compromised on just this week, but unfortunately, I just saw one small article on it. The details weren't clear to me. But basically, the trade union movement wants to avoid having their gains that were key to them in the liberation movement, being eroded. And they object strenuously to the government, overall government economic direction. I think, though, turning back privatization is going to be the key struggle, and that's what they're going to focus on, and there'll be more strikes over that particular issue. But more generally, I think the problem is the labor movement feels that they're not being consulted. Nominally, they are part of this alliance, this governing alliance, and yet in practice, both the Communist Party and the ANC say, yes, 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 of course, we're all for the working class, yes, 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 socialism now, and then they go ahead and pursue a policy that's 180 degrees to the opposite. And the trade union movement says, wait, I thought you just agreed to do it this way. Now you're telling us we need to have more flexible labor markets. What's going on? So there's this sense, especially among the rank and file, I think, that Kosanti is being placated, right? That they're being patronized, that they're being told yes, and then their vote is being taken for granted. Because when it comes down to it, what this is about is politics. Right, so on the 7th Congress of Kosanti in September, and I'll end with this because it's important, I think. And I watched this on television. It was televised nationally in South Africa. Very exciting thing to watch. The leadership of Kosanti, the president, William Modise, had some very, very hard words directly at Mbeki, who was there in the ANC, basically saying, for instance, privatization, the proposed amendments of the Labor Relations Act, these represent, and this is a quote because I was watching and wrote it down, a crisis for the alliance. This greatly erodes the faith that Kosanti has that we can remain in this governing tripartite alliance. What was the response to that? And Mbeki got up and gave a speech and said essentially, if you weaken the alliance, you're going to give comfort to our enemies. You will open the door to this political coalition of so-called liberal whites and former Afrikaner nationalists who will then, if you split the ANC and the liberation movement, you'll open the door to the opposition. This is similar to the argument against Ralph Nader, I think. Okay. And what did Blaise Nzimande, who is the general secretary of the South African Communist Party, say at that same Congress? After talking a lot in the same vein as the Kasatu president, he said, of course, voting for the ANC in the December local elections is non-negotiable. It doesn't matter how much you screw the labor movement. Kasatu is still going to come out and vote for the ANC in December because there really is no alternative. And ultimately, that is what happened. Despite a lot of talk of running independent candidates or empowering the trade union movement or creating a labor party that might be an alternative, in the end, the ANC was the only political game in town for Kasatu members and for African workers. And that's where they went. I think there are a few other points I'd like to make, but I know that people like to ask questions. The other basic thing that Kasatu has put forward is policy. They proposed a basic income grant. Right? That is, all South Africans below a certain level, economic level, will get 100 or 200 rand a month. Very little money, but nevertheless, this is sort of the notion of priming the pump, putting money in there both as a safety net for individuals and also to generate consumer spending to boost the domestic sector of domestic production as opposed to export. This idea was rejected. The new South African budget, which is made not in consultation with Parliament, but just emanates from Trevor Manuel, the Minister of Finance, was just announced this week. No basic income grant, absolutely not. On the other hand, there's this other thing called the skills development tax, very important to the trade union movement, which is a payroll tax, like FICA, right? But instead of being then spent down the line for retirement benefits for Social Security, it's spent into a fund almost immediately that helps uplift people who need skills and training. Right? And businesses hate this tax. While I was there, it was 0.5% of the payroll. In the new budget, it was just up to 1% of the payroll. So that's a major victory for the trade union movement. And I was talking to people beforehand, and a number of people have mentioned this article that they've read in Monthly Review about South Africa and globalization and neoliberalism, which I haven't seen yet, but which people found very depressing. You know, that essentially the liberation project, at least in its socialist guise, at least in terms of economic transformation, at least in terms of a challenge to global capitalism, is essentially over in South Africa. I don't really think so. I mean, in some ways, driving here today, I was thinking about that, and I thought maybe that's true. But the point here is that the labor movement is militant, very well organized in key sectors, and is still willing to push. Right? They're within the government, they're within the alliance. To a certain degree, that means they can push and they can get results. The downside, of course, is that it means they also have to play the game and negotiate. They can't go outside and create a third party because they won't have the political influence. This is the debate within the trade union movement now. How much do we push inside to steer things back in the direction of RDP and away from GEAR, versus at what point do we just throw in the towel and say the ANC is not listening, our nominal partners in the Communist Party, actually far from being an aide, are doing the ANC's dirty work, we need to go our own way. At what point does that decision get made? I don't think it gets made for a couple of years yet, but that's kind of the internal debate within the South African trade union movement today. I'll end there. Thank you.